Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This week on Court Report, we have guilty verdicts, new motions, judges stepping aside, and the FBI warning that some of the most talked about ransom notes in a national case may be fake. We also have the two cases that refuse to end, updates on Karen Reed and Alex Murdoch. Let's get you caught up. This is the 13th Juror Podcast, where we explore the trials, investigations, and true crime stories that everyone is talking about. I'm your host, Brandi Churchwell, and this is Court Report, your weekly roundup of the biggest courtroom headlines, breaking stories, and the legal developments shaping the nation's most talked about cases. All right, jurors, let's start out the episode with verdicts reached this week. Now, one major case that wrapped up this week was the trial of Blaze Taylor. After hearing 7 days of testimony, a Tennessee jury found Taylor guilty on all counts in the poisoning deaths of his girlfriend, Jade Benning, and their unborn daughter. Now, throughout the trial, jurors heard testimony from investigators, medical experts, family members, and people who knew both Jade and Blaze as prosecutors laid out their case that this wasn't just a tragic accident, but a deliberate act. Now, if you've been following this case, you know that there is so much more to this story than I can fit into Court Report. I just released a full episode breaking down the entire trial, from the evidence and testimony to the defense's arguments to the bombshell testimony. I can't wait for you to get to that part. Let me know what you think. And also how the jury ultimately reached its decision. So if you want the complete picture, be sure to check out that episode after you finish this one. All right, now for a quick update in a case that we will be watching closely as it continues to head toward trial, the case of Courtney Clinney. Now, I followed this one a lot on my YouTube. We've talked about it a lot on my social media. But if you need a refresher, Courtney Clinney is the Miami OnlyFans model accused of fatally stabbing her boyfriend, Christian Obomseli. Now, this was inside their luxury apartment in Miami in April of 2022. So Courtney admits that she stabbed Christian, but she says that she acted in self-defense after what her attorneys describe as a pattern of domestic abuse. So this week, her defense team filed a new pretrial motion asking the judge to decide before trial what evidence the prosecution will be allowed to introduce about Christian's character. The defense expects prosecutors to present evidence that Christian was a peaceful person in an effort to rebut Courtney's claims of self-defense and battered spouse syndrome. Now, this has been one of the main topics surrounding this case, y'all. I was on Court TV a few times talking about this case. This really comes down to what the jury is going to believe. Are they going to believe that Christian was this violent, abusive person and Courtney was protecting herself? Or are they going to believe that Courtney was the aggressor? There's a lot of evidence showing that Courtney has been the aggressor. And there are videos, there are even podcasts where she's talking about it. I mean, this is not exactly a wild stretch of the imagination to view her as the aggressor. So we don't know all of the information that's going to come out. That's yet to be seen. That'll be in trial. But we do know that Courtney's team is claiming self-defense. And we also know that the prosecution is going to present evidence that Christian was not really the aggressive type. But Courtney's attorneys argue that if the state wants to portray Christian as peaceful, then the jury should also be allowed to hear about a prior animal cruelty case that they say involves Christian. So according to the motion, Christian was previously the subject of an arrest warrant alleging that he abandoned a dog in a cage when he left an apartment without food or water, and it resulted in the dog's death from dehydration. Now, the defense is asking that the judge hold a hearing and decide whether prosecutors can introduce evidence of Christian's peaceful character before the jury ever hears it. Now, this is getting kind of messy, but this trial is coming up. So this is kind of when all of these final motions are done to see what evidence is going to be allowed in and what's not. So As always, remember that motions like this are requests, not rulings. So the judge has not yet decided what evidence the jury will ultimately be allowed to hear at trial. And I'm interested too to see what else comes out. There's so many things that we already know, but there are so many things that we won't know until that day gets here. So it's coming up soon, and I will keep y'all posted on that. All right, let's switch gears to some appeals and legal twist updates. Now, one of the biggest appeal decisions this week, Charlie Adelson. Charlie Adelson has officially lost his appeal. On Wednesday, Florida's First District Court of Appeal upheld Charlie's convictions for first-degree murder, conspiracy, and solicitation in the 2014 murder-for-hire killing of Dan Markell. Now, the biggest issue on appeal centered on whether the trial should have been moved to a different county because of extensive media coverage. Adelson's attorney argued that finding an impartial jury in Leon County was impossible, but the appellate court was not convinced. The judges pointed out that the defense accepted the jury that was ultimately seated and, most importantly, never filed the required written motion to request a change of venue after the jury was seated, but before the jury was sworn. The court also found nothing in the record to suggest that any of the jurors who served were actually biased. In other words, the appellate court found no legal error that would justify overturning the conviction. So, Charlie Adelson will remain in his forever home in prison. Now, his legal team can still ask the Florida Supreme Court to review the case, but that court is not required to take it. Now, for those of you who have followed this case with me for a while, it probably won't surprise you that Charlie wasn't exactly thrilled with his jury. Now, if you've listened to my coverage on the Adelson family, you know that after his conviction, Charlie had plenty to say in recorded jail calls with his dear old Mama Donna, who, as we all know, was later arrested herself and convicted for her role in the murder of Dan Markell. So here's a little context. Charlie and the rest of the Adelson family lived in South Florida, in the Miami area. Now, they were wealthy, they owned a successful dental practice, and they lived a very different lifestyle than some of the people in Tallahassee, where Dan Markell had accepted a position at Florida State University. And y'all, look, I live up here in the Florida Panhandle, and I can tell you firsthand, South Florida and North Florida might be the same state, but they are two completely different worlds. Neither is better than the other, but they definitely have very different cultures. Now, during his trial, Charlie testified in his own defense, and y'all, he genuinely believed that he had convinced the jury. In fact, he was reportedly so confident that he was going home that he had already given away all of his commissary items to other inmates before his verdict was ever read. This almost really shocked me. I know nothing with the Adelsons should really shock us anymore, but this actually shocked me because, y'all, I was in that courtroom when Charlie testified, and I don't think he did as good as he had it in his head that he did. He actually came across very different than what his own personal perception of himself was. So, a Leon County jury convicted him, and he's been in prison ever since. Now, in those recorded jail calls after the verdict, Charlie complained that he had not been judged by a jury of his peers. He described his idea of a jury of his peers as quote-unquote intelligent people, and he went on to criticize several jurors based on their appearance. He made disparaging comments about individual members of the panel and also pointed out the racial makeup of the jury. Now, y'all, some of the stuff he said was really bad. Like, he referred to some of them as inbred and redneck. And I was in that courtroom. I saw this jury, and it was a totally normal, regular jury. And it just so happens I totally agree with their decision, and I think they reached the right verdict. But based on what Charlie had to say, and he had a lot to say, it came as a surprise to exactly no one that one of the primary issues raised on appeal was the jury. But this week, Florida's First District Court of Appeal rejected those arguments, upheld Charlie Adelson's convictions, and for now, he'll remain exactly where that Leon County jury sent him. We'll be right back.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
In other major cases that we are following, we have an update on the case that just refuses to end. Many of you found me through my coverage of Karen Reed. Now, I've dedicated nearly 60 episodes to this case, following it from the summer of 2023 through the first trial in 2024 and the retrial in 2025. And even though Karen has been acquitted in the death of Officer John O'Keefe, the legal drama is far from over because the civil cases have really taken center stage. So this week, the judge overseeing the wrongful death lawsuit filed by John O'Keefe's family held an emergency hearing after confidential court records involving former Massachusetts State Police Trooper Michael Proctor were allegedly leaked. Now, to understand why this is such a big deal, we kind of have to back up just a little bit. This has been kind of an ongoing issue where Proctor's deposition for this case has been delayed. So Proctor's attorneys told the court that he had medical issues that explained why he could not go forward with his deposition. They then filed those records with the court, and the judge immediately ordered them impounded, meaning they were sealed from public view and could only be accessed by the parties involved in the lawsuit. So according to the judge, about 30 minutes after those records were filed under seal, information from those documents appeared publicly on X, formerly known as Twitter. That is what triggered everything that followed. So the judge issued an order saying that he had information creating what he called a reasonable inference that his impoundment order had been violated. Now, he then ordered every attorney and every party in this case to file sworn certifications under penalty of perjury, explaining everything they knew about how that sealed information may have been released to the public. In other words, everyone had to submit a sworn statement saying either, "Here's what I know," or "I have no knowledge of how this happened." And if they lied, they can be put in prison. This is like serious stuff. Now, at the same time, the judge paused any further efforts to depose Proctor until further order of the court, which is significant because, y'all, his testimony is expected to play a major role in this lawsuit. So then came another surprise. The judge ordered everyone to appear in person in Massachusetts just 2 days later for an emergency hearing. And remember, this is during a holiday week. Attorneys from all around the country now have to suddenly rearrange schedules and get to Massachusetts on very short notice. Now, that's not something that courts do routinely. This is a huge, huge deal. So naturally, people expected something major was about to happen. But the hearing did not quite unfold the way many people expected. The judge explained when it started that he had learned of information the previous Friday that he considered serious enough to require everyone to drop what they're doing and appear in person. He said the sealed documents had been filed at 2:22 p.m. on June 8th, and that time and date is important. And he said that exactly 30 minutes later, at 2:52 p.m., a post appeared on X containing some of the impounded information. Now, that's what led him to require all 32 parties and attorneys to submit sworn certifications. But during the hearing itself, the judge never actually identified who he believed was responsible. He never displayed the allegedly leaked material, and he never sanctioned anyone. And he didn't allow the attorneys to respond either. So it wasn't really a hearing. It was just kind of them hearing the judge. But this left a lot of people wondering exactly what the purpose of this was and where the court goes from here. Okay, so here's where things get really interesting. This case always gets really interesting, right? So as many of you know, the Karen Reed community is incredibly active online. I mean, incredibly active. So once the judge referenced the exact date, exact time, and the fact that the information involved Proctor's medical records, people immediately started trying to identify the post that he was referring to. So one main theory quickly emerged, and it centers on a post made by Aiden Carney, better known as Turtle Boy. Okay, try to follow me with this. 2 days before the sealed records were filed, Carney discussed receiving a tip that Proctor had checked himself into a mental health facility in Florida to avoid his deposition. Now, this is 2 days before those files that were submitted to the court and sealed. But after the deposition was delayed that morning on the 8th, Carney publicly suggested on X that that might be the reason. His post said that Proctor decided to have a mental health crisis after the whole world found out about his racist text. He says that sources told him that he had checked himself into a mental health facility in Florida to try to avoid the deposition that he was supposed to have that day. Carney goes on to say that Proctor's team actually filed a motion at the last minute on Friday to delay the deposition that was supposed to take place on Monday, but the judge wanted proof. The proof that was submitted was an affidavit that was impounded. So Carney said that that affidavit that was impounded likely said that Proctor was in a mental hospital. So on Friday, Proctor's team says he can't show up for his deposition on Monday. Over the weekend sometime, Carney gets a tip saying that he is in a mental hospital and he's doing it to try to avoid the deposition. And then on Monday, these papers are filed and they're sealed and Carney says, hey, it's probably because he's in a mental hospital. So here's the reason that this became so controversial. Because a screenshot of that X post from Carney has been widely circulated online. And the screenshot actually displays a timestamp of 2:52 p.m. But here's the problem. That timestamp showing 2:52 p.m. is only because the screenshot of the post was taken from a different time zone. The post itself that Carney made was actually published hours earlier, hours before the sealed documents were ever filed with the court. And, like Carney said, it was from a source that he mentioned days earlier on his live stream. It was not from sealed court documents that did not even exist yet. So this just got really messy, right? Because if that's the same post that the judge was referring to, it raises obvious questions. The problem is, it seems like all of this suddenly took off and just flew off the handle based on a screenshot from a different time zone. And if nothing was double-checked before requiring 32 people to drop their plans and appear in person a few days before the holiday so that they could be scolded publicly, then I have grave concerns. Now, this all comes as the civil litigation surrounding Karen Reed continues to expand. In addition to defending herself against the wrongful death lawsuit, Karen also has filed her own lawsuit against the Massachusetts State Police and the Canton Police Department, alleging systemic misconduct in the investigation that led to her prosecution. Now, we went over that on last week's episode. So while Karen Reed's criminal case may finally be over, y'all, the legal battles surrounding the investigation are far from finished. I feel like this is one of those cases that I'm going to be covering another 60 episodes from now. One more appeal to keep an eye on is the case of Corey Richens. Now, if you need a refresher, Corey was convicted earlier this year of murdering her husband, Eric Richens, by poisoning him with fentanyl before later writing a children's book about grief. Now, a jury convicted her of attempted murder, insurance fraud, and forgery, and she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But this week, Corey's attorneys filed a motion asking for a new trial. They argue that she was denied a fair trial because they say the judge repeatedly showed his bias in favor of prosecutors, that he interrupted the defense in front of the jury and allowed prosecutors to introduce evidence of alleged financial misconduct that they claim unfairly prejudiced the jury. They also said that the judge was often impatient, critical, and hostile toward the defense, but not the prosecutors. The defense also argues that the cumulative effect of all of those alleged errors deprived Corey of a fair trial. But then came kind of an unexpected twist, because just one day after that motion was filed, the trial judge actually recused himself from any further proceedings in the case. He said, given the apparent objective bias that was discussed, the actual conflict of interest created by allegations of the court bias, and the need to ensure due process, disqualification from ruling on this motion is warranted. meaning another judge will now be assigned to decide whether Corey is entitled to a new trial. Now, it's very important to point out, the recusal does not mean that the judge agreed with the defense's allegations or that a new trial has been granted. It basically just means a different judge will decide that question going forward.
We'll be right back.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, our other case that never seems to end. Alex Murdaugh was back in South Carolina courtroom Monday morning. Now, as you'll remember, Murdaugh's convictions in the murders of his wife Maggie and son Paul were overturned because of the jury tampering scandal involving the former Colleton County Clerk of Court, Becky Hill. Now, the case is essentially starting over, and Monday's hearing was focused on getting this retrial moving. Now, one thing that immediately stood out to me was the judge now overseeing the case, Judge Deborah McCaslin, I think is how you say her name. She made it very clear, y'all, that she is coming into this with fresh eyes. She said that she knows nothing about the first trial and does not want to know it through outside opinions. She's treating this like a brand new case, which, frankly, is exactly what you would want from a judge in this situation. Now, she also made another comment that caught my attention. She said that when this case landed on her docket, it immediately became the oldest case that she has, and she doesn't like old cases sitting around. So her message was pretty clear. She is not interested in unnecessary delays or letting this drag on for years. Now, from what we saw Monday, she seems very organized, very no-nonsense, and intent on keeping this case moving. Now, honestly, I came away pretty impressed. It's obviously still very early, but she appears to be the kind of judge who's going to keep both sides focused and hold everyone to the schedule. So I like that. The judge walks into a packed courtroom because there is still a ton of media attention around this case, of course. And the first issue that the court tackled was discovery, which, if you're not familiar with the term, is basically just the process where both sides kind of exchange all of the evidence before trial. Now, prosecutor Creighton Waters told the judge that as far as the state is concerned, everything has already been turned over to the defense. He said he's not aware of any outstanding discovery requests. He basically said that they have everything because they had it during the first trial. This is not new stuff. But the defense doesn't see discovery as being quite that simple. So Dick Harpootlian brought up comments made by Colleton County Sheriff's Investigator Jason Chapman in an interview about 10 days after the original trial. According to Harpootlian, Chapman suggested that he believed other people may have been at the crime scene helping after the murders, a statement that the defense says is inconsistent with the testimony that Chapman gave during the original trial. Harpootlian's point was essentially, we don't know what we don't know. In other words, if investigators made statements after the trial that weren't disclosed before, the defense wants to make sure they're uncovering everything this time around before they head back into court. Okay, we'll see how that goes. Now, the next discussion centered on something that might sound minor at first, but actually turned into one of the more heated exchanges of the morning. And that's whether or not Alex Murdaugh should be allowed to have a laptop in his prison cell to review the massive amount of discovery in this case. I mean, everyone acknowledged that there is an enormous amount of evidence to go through. Like, Dick Harpootlian argued that while Murdaugh may no longer be a practicing attorney, he spent decades trying cases. And Dick said that Alex is more than capable of reviewing the evidence himself. The defense actually argued that allowing him access to a laptop would help them prepare for trial because it would make it more efficient and actually help move the case along. But the state wasn't really buying that. Creighton Waters argued that there were legitimate security concerns. He pointed out that some of the discovery includes sensitive state grand jury material that cannot be improperly shared. And he reminded the court that Murdoch previously had a prison tablet taken away and alleged that he had received contraband from a family member while incarcerated. So rule following ain't exactly his thing. Waters also referenced Murdoch's financial crime convictions, arguing that that was another reason to proceed with caution when it comes to trusting Murdoch with stuff. Now, this is where things got a little tense. Harputlian accused the state of opposing nearly everything the defense was requesting to speed up the retrial. At one point, he said the idea of bringing him in here, chained up, the idea of not letting him have access to a laptop, the idea of opposing everything we're trying to do is expedite this process. He said, "I understand it's Mr. Waters' job to legally prejudice the defendant, but this is beyond the pale." Now, Creighton immediately pushed back, essentially telling Dick, "Come on, you know me better than that. You could definitely feel the temperature in the courtroom rise during this. It got a little bit tense." But in the end, the judge had already done her homework, so it was kind of a moot point. She told the attorneys that she had personally spoken with the prison warden before the hearing, and she said the answer is no. No inmates are allowed to keep laptops in their cells because of prison security concerns, and she wasn't going to make an exception for Big Red. She did, however, try to strike a balance. The judge said that Murdoch is absolutely entitled to review all the discovery in his case, but his attorneys will need to bring a laptop to the prison and review the materials with him in a conference room. Now, he won't be permitted to keep one in his cell, and someone must remain with him while he's using it. The other issue that came up was whether Alex Murdoch should remain shackled during future pretrial hearings. Now, I touched on this briefly in last week's court report because the defense had originally filed the motion, then withdrew it. Well, now they're asking the court to reconsider. And Dick Harputlian argued that these hearings aren't happening in a vacuum anymore. He said that they are being covered extensively by the media. Potential jurors could very well see images or video of Murdoch walking into court wearing a prison jumpsuit and leg shackles. And as Harputlian put it, quote, "Potential jurors are watching this right now. It's going to be wherever this goes. It's going to be difficult to get it there. And to the extent that they're parading him around in a jumpsuit, shackled like an animal, impact their view, it's going to make it more difficult for us to get a jury," end quote. Now, to make his point, Harputlian actually had Murdoch stand up in the courtroom so the judge could see exactly how he was restrained before renewing the motion. And it was kind of very showy. It was like, "Stand up and show them what they've done to you," and then said that it was like an animal. Now, the prosecution obviously saw this very differently. Creighton Waters argued that jurors would never see Murdoch in shackles during the actual trial, so there wouldn't be any prejudice where it matters most. And he also pointed out that Murdoch is currently serving decades in prison on his financial crime convictions and is awaiting retrial on 2 murder charges. So from the state's perspective, these restraints aren't unusual. They are just a matter of courthouse and public safety. Now, obviously, it would be totally different if this was in front of a jury. That would definitely be prejudicial. Can't do that. But this is just for the pretrial hearings. Now, the judge did not make a decision from the bench on this. So that's another issue we'll be watching. But she said that she will take the matter under advisement and issue a ruling later. Now, another major issue discussed at the hearing was the defense's request to move the retrial out of Colleton County. Judge did not rule on that Monday. Instead, she said that she would give the prosecution additional time to review the motion and asked both sides to see if they could reach an agreement. And if they can't, then she will make the decision herself. She did note, however, that future pretrial hearings will likely stay in Lexington County because the courthouse there has a larger courtroom, better security, and enough space to handle the attorneys, the media, and the public interest surrounding the case. Now, as for the trial itself, the defense argues that because the original convictions were overturned over misconduct by the Colleton County Clerk Court, it would be difficult for Murdoch to receive a fair retrial there. And that's an interesting point because the change of venue motions are usually pretty difficult to win unless there's a good reason. But this is not a typical case. The very reason this retrial is happening stems from what occurred in that courthouse. So it'll be interesting to see how the judge ultimately rules on that request. And finally, what was probably the biggest discussion of the morning was the DNA. Now, if you followed the original trial, you'll remember that there was unidentified male DNA found underneath one of Maggie Murdoch's fingernails. And at the time, investigators could not identify who it belonged to. And it ultimately was not a major focus of the trial. But now the defense wants to take another look.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Jim Griffin told the judge that technology has come a long way since 2021. So the defense wants to send that DNA sample to Othram, which is a forensic genetics lab in Texas that specializes in forensic genetic genealogy. It's the same lab that has helped identify unknown suspects in a number of high-profile cases. They worked in the Koberger investigation. And the defense says that Othram believes that it can perform much more advanced testing than what was available years ago when this trial first started. Now, they're even willing to pay for it themselves, as in the defense's. Now, Griffin explained that the DNA came from Maggie's left fingernail, and it was tested by SLED and was determined not to belong to Alex Murdoch. Instead, it belonged to an unidentified male. Now, the defense argument was pretty simple. They say they don't know who that DNA belongs to, and until they do, they can't say whether it's important or not. And Griffin also pointed out that one of the shell casings from the weapon used to kill Maggie was found underneath her body. So he's arguing that it is worth fully exploring every piece of forensic evidence before the retrial. The prosecution does not believe that this is a big game changer that the defense is suggesting it is. Creighton Waters said there's no evidence that Maggie was involved in a physical struggle with an attacker or that she suffered any kind of defensive wounds or anything that would suggest that she scratched someone during the murders. And he also reminded the court that DNA transfer is incredibly common. We leave DNA on people and objects all the time through completely innocent contact, like shaking hands and touching doorknobs or just simply kind of interacting with people. Now, Waters called the issue something of a red herring, but said that the state is not opposed to discussing reasonable testing with the defense and SLED. So that issue is still very much alive and going. And honestly, it's one of the biggest questions that I think everybody will kind of be watching as this case moves toward retrial. Because if Othram is ultimately able to test that sample and able to identify whose DNA was under Maggie's fingernails, it could become one of the most closely watched pieces of evidence in the entire case. It could also prove to be nothing. It could be, you know, like we said before, like a nail tech or a family member or something else. So there's really not anything that we can know until we know what we know. We don't know what we don't know, as Dick said. Now, the big question that everyone had walking into Monday was, when is this retrial actually going to happen? So the defense revealed that they currently expect to call 8 expert witnesses, and they reminded the court that if the DNA testing is approved, that process alone could take as long as 6 months. And because of that, they asked the judge to give them enough time to fully prepare before setting the case for trial. And the judge responded that she is currently looking at April 5th as the target date for the retrial. She did say that that timeline could change depending on how long the DNA testing ultimately takes. But one thing she made very clear is that once she sets a trial date, she expects everyone to be ready. In fact, she warned both sides that she does not grant continuances unless there's a very good reason. And based on everything we heard Monday, she seems determined to keep this case moving while still giving both sides the opportunity to prepare. The next pretrial hearing is scheduled for August 14th, so that's likely when we'll get a better idea of where the DNA testing stands and whether some of these outstanding motions have been resolved and whether that April 5th trial date is still on track. But as of now, it looks like we'll be back in the courtroom for Murdoch on April 5th. All right, we have one more big case update. According to multiple reports this week, the FBI has concluded that the three ransom-related messages that have surfaced publicly in the case of Nancy Guthrie are not genuine. Now, that includes the two notes that were reported shortly after Nancy disappeared, as well as the more recent message claiming to know the identity of her kidnappers. It's important to point out what that does and does not mean. It does not mean that investigators believe that Nancy wasn't abducted. It does not mean that the investigation is over. It does not mean that they are not looking at this as a potential ransom situation. The FBI says the case is still being treated as a kidnapping for ransom investigation, and investigators continue to pursue other evidence and leads. But unfortunately, it appears that those notes only served to distract investigators and add even more heartbreak for Nancy's family. How screwed up do you have to be in the head to send a fake ransom note? That just breaks my heart for that family. So we'll continue watching this case closely and bring you any significant developments as they happen. All right. And finally, before we wrap up, a interesting story this week, a terrifying situation unfolded Monday morning at the Bertie Martin Regional Detention Center in North Carolina. So inmates reportedly overpowered correctional officers and took control of the jail. According to the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, the incident began around 5 a.m. when inmates assaulted on guard duties. Now, at the time, 88 inmates and three correctional officers were inside the detention center, and one officer managed to escape while two others were taken hostage. So after several hours of negotiations, authorities announced that around 9:30 a.m., the two hostages and 18 inmates were safely released. About 20 minutes later, another large group of inmates exited the facility as law enforcement continued working toward a peaceful resolution. Just before 2 p.m. Eastern, officials confirmed the incident had come to an end. So the SBI and FBI cleared the facility and all inmates and staff were accounted for. Those injured received medical treatment and inmates were transferred to other detention facilities and the jail remained secured while officials assessed the damage. So authorities said there's no ongoing threat to the public, and they continued to ask people to avoid the area. It was a huge, chaotic morning for everyone involved. But my first thought was, have y'all ever seen Mayor of Kingstown? This was very Mayor of Kingstown. Wild stuff coming out of North Carolina. So that's it. That's all we've got. That is your court report for this week. The stories continue, the evidence keeps coming, and the legal process is far from over. I'll be back next week with the latest developments. Until then, keep asking questions, keep looking at the evidence, and decide for yourself what you believe. My name is Brandi Churchwell, creator and host of the 13th Juror podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating or review. It helps more listeners discover the podcast. And if you know someone who would find this case as fascinating as you did, share this episode with them. For additional episodes, case updates, and more information about the podcast, visit our website at 13thjurorpodcast.com. The evidence has been presented, the arguments have been made, and now comes the same question faced by every juror. What do you believe? Thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.